This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, right now we have with us on the line Mr. John Clark. And he's written a book entitled Christian Words and Christian Actions. And when I first saw the book, I'll have to admit, I just didn't want to get into a long bashing of President Bush, and I put off having Mr. Clark on, but after I did have him on one of our other programs, he does such a great job, I wanted to have him back, so I've invited him to be with us this afternoon, because I think his analysis of what's going on, not simply with the Bush administration, but what's happening to our legal system, what's happening to every aspect of our society, is very important. The book itself is a fascinating book. I was captivated reading it. And, of course, well, I'm going to let John tell you just a little bit about himself and how he happened to be doing that. As you read this book, you almost had a feeling he was an attorney, and when I talked to him, I found out he was. So, John, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how it was that you came to write the book?
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan, for having me on again. Yes, you caught me. I have a legal training, but so did the Apostle Paul, as my understanding. And I do enjoy his writings. I had been trained in man's law. I was raised without Christian faith. I didn't have any, I guess you could call me an agnostic. And I did very well in law school, and my business was thriving. But around 1997, I became very, very ill. And that illness, it turned out, Romans 8:28, I believe, God used it for good. And it brought me to my faith, a very deep Christian faith. I just keep moving more and more towards him, and I'm very fond of the writings of Oswald Chambers and many other devotionals. But I've read and reread the New Testament. It's had a profound effect on my life, and it motivated me to write this book. And so it really was my faith that was my inspiration, and not a political agenda that prompted me to write this book.
And I don't think that we can depend on either political party. I think that if we look to politicians to solve our problems, why, we're going to be in real trouble. But the biggest thing in America is we have a country that is moving away from its Christian foundation. Would that be a fair assessment?
I would concur, yes, sir.
All right, fine. Well, we have a right, though, to be critical of President Bush, after all. You know, he is a man who professes to be a born-again Christian, and yet, of course, he advocates torture. He permits torture. He says he's against torture, and then he wants legislation passed to legalize torture. And this reflects on Christianity. In fact, I think that as people throughout the world looked upon America as a Christian nation and look on our president as a Christian leader, I don't think that this is an example that's going to attract many people to explore Christianity, do you?
Well, as you know, I concur very strongly. In fact, again, I perhaps was more offended by how Mr. Bush's policies have reflected on my faith than I was on how it's reflected on my country. I mean, my country has a certain history of hypocrisy or imperialism, and we're not that surprised when that enters the political sphere. But when a man professes to be Christian and uses that faith to gain political office, then what he does now does reflect, I think, on our faith. And when you talk about the right to be critical of George Bush, as you know, I argue that that's not a right, that's an obligation, just as we as Americans have an obligation to hold our leaders accountable under our Constitution and in order for our democratic structure to function. As Christians, we're called to hold Christian leaders accountable likewise, so that the body of Christ and the Christian religion is not tainted by such a hypocrisy.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is John Clark, who is an attorney, and of course he was very, very prosperous, as some attorneys are, and but about 1997, he became very ill. And it was that illness that brought him to a personal faith in Jesus Christ, and it was that, of course, that motivated him to write a book. The book is entitled Christian Words on Christian Actions, and of course it is a complaint about what's happening in our nation today, as we have a leader who professes to be a Christian, and yet so many of the things he does brings actually discredit to the Christian faith. And I'm going to let you sort of list some of those things that are of concern to you.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. As you know, what I did in my book is I split up the book into different subject areas so we could look in turn at different areas and look at what George W. Bush has promised this country, what his policies have been, and what the teachings of Christ or other Christians over the years would tell us about those policies. And what I determined was that the war in Iraq cannot be, does not comply with Christian doctrine. It cannot be justified in Christian doctrine. Neither can the use of torture or many of Mr. Bush's policies, which have had the effect of transferring wealth from the rich to the poor in a very reverse Christian fashion. In fact, there are very few policies that one could find in this administration that we could say there's really been a Christian achievement or a Christian accomplishment in this administration.
Well, of course, we hear a great deal about faith-based initiatives, but so often this is simply a means of rewarding people who support the administration within the Christian community. And if you're a good supporter, well, you may get $1 million or $2 million, but you're supposed to use it for, you know, for good works. But it is not the function of the federal government, according to our Constitution, to reward political supporters with large sums of money, even if they use it for good purposes. Does that bother you at all?
Well, I agree completely, and particularly the faith-based initiative was a perfect example of where there were lots of promises of and words of help, but in actuality, the funding for those programs was minuscule. As you point out, there was some question about how ethical that money was administered. The program's head, a lifelong religious right Christian, left pretty quickly afterwards. But also, that program was used to supplant a lot of other government funding for social programs. It's not that I'm a big spender, but I think that if government is going to be involved in our lives, which it is, that it should try to act in accordance with Christian tenets. And making the poor poorer and the rich richer is just not what Jesus would have us do. And
hold that thought right there, John. We'll be right back here.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is John Carr. And John is an attorney, but he's not practicing law at the present time. In fact, he is debating whether to start seminary, and he hasn't told me whether he's going to do that or continue trying to get his book distributed or perhaps write other books. But his book is Christian Words on Christian Actions, talking about the current administration. And I don't think this is necessarily simply limited to the Republicans, because many times the Democrats do exactly the same sort of thing. After all, we saw Bill Clinton coming out of the church every Sunday with a Bible under his arm. And, well, if there was ever Christian words and then Christian actions, why, we saw those in the Oval Office. But go ahead with your story there, John. The things that disturb you about what's going on today and the trends in America that was once a bastion of Christianity and integrity and honor and no longer, of course, is America a nation of integrity, and I think increasingly throughout the world. Other countries are coming to despise our nation because of the things we are supporting and our autocratic effort to tell everybody in the world exactly what they're going to do. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. I think you're quite right that both of the parties in this country have failed us, and neither of them are steering us in a more Christian direction. If we are to call ourselves a Christian nation, which many Americans do, then it is incumbent upon us to behave like a Christian nation. Too many people are quick to criticize one side and then make excuses for their own, and that kind of hypocrisy is allowing ideology rather than a Christian morality to steer our boat in America. And many were very upset about Bill Clinton, but now they don't seem to complain about George Bush's conduct. Many who complain about George Bush make excuses for Bill Clinton's lying to the American people. We need one standard of integrity for both parties, and we don't need to make exceptions because of our partisanship. And other countries are, in fact, not just despising our leaders as they've come to dislike us in recent years. Polls are showing that other nations in the world are starting to dislike Americans as well, presumably because we don't hold our standard, our our leaders accountable to those standards of Christianity and the rule of law which we traditionally have. We're losing our American goodwill. We're losing Christian goodwill in the world today.
And we're giving Christianity a very, very bad name and reputation. And I think this is totally unfair, and it is only because we've allowed our leaders to equate their actions with Christianity, claiming that God told them to do it, so that means it's all right. Well, why don't you cover some of the other things that you go into in your book, and certainly some of the things that have happened in the legal profession?
Well, the No Child Left Behind Act, I have a chapter on that because that's a dramatic expansion of the federal government, which has really moved our children more to an industrialized society and more central control, and has actually created a data bank of them for military purposes. It's very hard to argue that that's expanded local autonomy, which is what George Bush said he believed in. There are many other areas that tort reform, where George Bush talks about tort reform, really what he wants to do is reduce non-economic damage awards, and many studies have shown they're not partisan studies, have shown that the effect of such restrictions is to disproportionately impact the very poor and children, the elderly and women. There are many different policies that this administration has undertaken which are, I submit, reverse Christian. And you're quite right when you point out about how that's hurt the view the world has of Christianity. In fact, the Iraq War can be tied to the Christian definition of a crusade. And part of that is the idea that God is guiding us to do these things and that we are going to relentlessly prosecute this war in God's favor and that we are godly warriors and our enemies are ungodly. And that dehumanizing of our enemies that's part of a crusade is not what Jesus would have us do. He would have us love our enemies and embrace them. And the dehumanization that's going on right now towards the Arab people, the Muslim people of this world, by many Americans, is a patently unchristian product of this kind of ideology and painting others to be patently evil. God loves all his children.
And, of course, the thing is that the term Islamofascism is creeping into our language, into our lexicon. And we equate all Muslims, you know, they're all bad. And you know, remember what happened back in 1492 when they had to drive the Muslims out of Spain and the battle in the 1680s in Vienna when the Muslims were threatening Europe. And they bring all of these things up to justify what we're doing today by invading Afghanistan, Iraq, and perhaps very soon Iran. What's the solution, though, John?
Well, the solution is Jesus Christ. We don't want others in the world to label all Americans as being guilty of the sins of our governments and being painted as being intolerant. Neither should we paint 1.2 billion Muslims by virtue of the actions of the least common denominator, so to speak, the most evil. We as Christians should be embracing Muslims around the world and trying to show them the best face possible of our faith. That's our job, is to bring them to a correct understanding of Christianity and not show them a warped view, which is to the rest of the world. What we're doing in Christ's name right now is much like what the Islamic extremists are doing in the name of Islam right now under Osama bin Laden. And we need to differentiate ourselves as being true to Christ and true to the rules of Christianity and not making exceptions because of fear and fear-mongering and hate and war.
No, I agree with you totally, and I share your concern about the No Child Left Behind program, which was really Senator Teddy Kennedy's legislation. He could never get that through. He had to wait until the Republicans got into power, and then they were forced to go along with George Bush, who backed Ted Kennedy's bill. But why should we be surprised when the Bush Family Foundation gave the Most Outstanding Citizen of the Year prize for 2003 to none other than good old Ted Kennedy? Right, go ahead. What are some of the other things that really irk you about what's going on today that you want to bring to the attention of our listeners?
Well, perhaps more as an American conservative and less as a Christian, I am panic-stricken is almost the phrase. But I am astonished at the level of federal debt being incurred by this administration, a level of debt which my children and grandchildren are going to presumably be able to saddle on their backs in a declining economy with a runaway budget and huge military spending. So it's not conservative, but neither is it Christian to be such a poor steward of our nation's resources. And should we enter great times of distress, we will not have the capacity to borrow those funds because we will have already tapped our credit out with the world. So again, that's certainly not conservative, and I argue that it's also not good Christian stewardship of America's resources.
But then what's the solution? We have all this spending. I mean, after all, we can't increase taxes. If we did, we'd collapse the economy. And lowering the taxes has actually stimulated the economy. But, of course, you can't increase spending and lower taxes without getting into some problems.
Well, we do have to cut government pork. The problem is that government of whatever type or description only grows larger. And the government in this country, state and federal combined, is becoming too much of a dominant force in our society, and it's not really a wealth creator. And the trickle-down idea, you could really reverse that. You could use trickle-up as probably a more effective strategy. Take the same money that was given back in tax refunds and give it to the poor and let them spend it. It would probably have more stimulus for the economy. You don't spend a dollar to get a quarter. John Kenneth Galbraith said to trickle-down economics is like feeding the sparrows by giving oats to the horse. The idea that we should give money to the rich to help us, it might be a good idea if it weren't leveraged. But in truth, all of the money that's been given back in tax, quote-unquote, refunds by this administration has in reality been debt. It's been borrowed money because this government is very much in the red. So it's questionable whether that's going to help us. But certainly when it's borrowed money, I think we've proved in the past that such debt does not help us.
All right, fine. Well, I certainly share your concern about the economic policies that are being carried out in this country today. In fact, we had far better economic policies under the Clinton administration than we have the Bush administration. We've accumulated the largest debts in the entire history of our nation. First of all, under Ronald Reagan, and now under George W. Bush. But, of course, most Americans can't believe that because the Republicans are supposed to be, fiscally responsible. And yet, there's such a difference between perception and reality.
So, well, there are words and then actions. And we're told, Jesus tells us that we will know them by their fruit. And I guess that would be true of Christians and also true conservatives or Republicans. That's not been traditionally a Republican mainstay to be spending like this, and you're quite right. Mr. Reagan definitely brought us into that sphere as well with a tremendous debt run-up that, in the short run, of course, it looks like it stimulates the economy. If I borrowed $20,000 on a credit card, I'd feel like I was living high off the hog for a while, too. But the debt repayment is a hangover, and we still haven't repaid what Reagan borrowed in the 80s. That's part of the $9 trillion federal deficit that we're carrying right now.
It is pretty close to $9 trillion. It's going up just like a skyrocket. Almost vertically at the present time. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. If you'd like to talk to our guest this afternoon, his name is John Clark, and his book is Christian Words, Unchristian Actions. That's Christian Words, Unchristian Actions. And it's really much more than simply a synopsis of the activities of the Reagan administration. It is a real commentary on what's going on in America and so many of the policies of the federal government and the things that they're doing and the things that they're spending money on. And then what about our court system? What about our legal system? Where does that fit into it?
Well, as far as the broader trends of where we see America going, we see man being less and less responsive to God's laws. And just like Israel in the Old Testament, there was a repeated lesson there, which is that if we turn away from God and turn to our own means for support, if we become what we might call self-reliant in our individualist society and in our court systems, then we'll pay the price because we'll learn the hard way that we shouldn't plan anything without God's blessings. Here in Vermont, when we take an oath in court, we don't even incite God anymore. God isn't even mentioned. And I think that's more the case elsewhere. We try to push God right out of our secular society, but it doesn't work.
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is John Klar. We're really talking about what's happening to the legal profession. John pointed out that Ader in Vermont, where he lives, you take an oath, but you don't take an oath to God. What good is an oath if you don't swear it to God? What meaning does it possibly have?
Well, it has none, and it becomes almost that's actually an opportunity to show people how shallow the world is without faith. But also something that I discuss in my book is part of the problem in America, and I want to be gentle in saying this, but because I don't mean to sound like I'm condemning people, but many Americans blame the lawyers for the lawsuits that they file and for the verdicts in jury awards that they award. It wasn't lawyers who gave the woman $13 million in the McDonald's coffee burn case. We also blame our politicians for the policies they affect, but we do have the power through our votes to elect people of more integrity. We've been sleeping and allowing others to run our business. We've been allowing others to run our government, and we can't do that in our republic. We have to take our hands and put them on the reins of government and be involved, or else we can't be surprised when our government becomes a runaway train that is not responsive to us anymore. That's really where we are right now. We're at a place in our history where the politicians are supposed to be winning American citizens' votes, but they're paid by corporate America. So their paymasters are not those that they're supposed to be responsive to. And we see this melding of corporate and government interests in which we can be certain that Americans and American Christians will not be catered to or listened to. If I could mention, the book is available through Wine Press Publishing, which is a Christian publisher in Washington State. Their number is 877-421-7323. That's 877-421-7323. And I have some more information available at my website at christianwords.us, which I invite people to have a look at. And I thank you, Dr. Stan, for allowing me to plug the book there.
All right, fine. We'll let you plug it, but it'll be a lot better when we get all of our stations back with us right now. Anyway, as we begin looking at what's going on today and this idea that, there are juries that make these outlandish awards, and certainly we have politicians who are making all sorts of special concessions to special interest groups. In fact, we've seen this time after time, and yet when people get up in arms, as they were when they found out that in the Homeland Security legislation, there was a little clause that had been put in there in the middle of the night to give total immunity to Eli Lilly and Company for the disastrous effects of thimerosal in creating autism or whatever damage thimerosal does. They didn't specify what damage it was, but of course, obviously, Eli Lilly knew it was. So they attached this into the Office of Homeland Security bill, a special provision, so that Eli Lilly could not be sued for the damage they'd done over a period of 30 years to the minds and brains and souls of our children. Fortunately, the people, when they learned of it, were up in arms, and it was amazing, John, how the senators backed away, and, we didn't even know it was there. Oh, no, we wouldn't want to include that. Why, that has nothing to do with Homeland Security. And yet, of course, the Speaker of the House at that time had actually put that in, and Dick Armey, because somebody had asked him to put it in. And, we do have some of the finest politicians in Washington, D.C., that money could buy. But we still elect them, and if we will do what's right, and we will hold their feet to the fire, and as Eric Dirksen said so well, Senator Dirksen, politicians don't see the light till they feel the heat. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Klar, and his book is Christian Words on Christian Actions. If you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. And John's book really is pointing out that Christianity is getting a bad rap. That would be sort of a vernacular way of saying that, what's going on in Washington, D.C., and our policies in Afghanistan and Iraq and Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib, and kidnapping people and sending them to other countries for torture, certainly doesn't give Christianity a very good name, does it?
No, it doesn't. And what we see right now, particularly, is we see sort of all of the batter forces of recent history in America coming to the fore in this administration, where our morality is becoming that corporate morality that seems to be dominating so much of our legislation, as you point out, even sneaking in provisions into the Homeland Security Act, which was so huge and voluminous that I'm sure many senators didn't realize that bit of pork was squeezed in there, and they did backpedal quickly. But so many times they're not, and so much legislation behind the scenes has special interests and corporate interests pushing the buttons. I recently read a historian who wrote that America has managed to do in 30 years what it took the Romans 300 years to do in the fractious infighting amongst special interest groups. The question we have to ask as Americans is, George Bush is very focused on the what's good for business is good for America kind of idea of the free market idea. But are we a Christian nation or are we a capitalist nation? And by that, I'm not necessarily condemning all capitalism. But the morality of corporations is the maximization of profits at any cost, public health or anything else. That is what they are sworn to do. And we as Christians take a very different oath. And it's about human welfare and compassion for enemies and strangers and not about maximizing profits. It's really time for America as a nation and for Americans to decide which morality we're going to use to steer our boat and quit saying that it's one while, in fact, we employ another. And, in fact, otherwise, we see many Machiavellian policies. That's the idea the end justifies the means ruling us here in America. And the outcome of Iraq is not going to determine whether that was a just war in Christian doctrine. If we wait to determine if it's successful, George Bush was right. If it's a failure, he was wrong. That's an end justifies the means morality. Where is America's morality? In which case, we can decide whether a war is moral or not at the outset. We don't have to wait to see who wins to find out. Christ teaches us how to approach life in every day and every decision, and we've abandoned him in our country today.
Well, John, you know, I've been to Christian meetings, and here people, I say, this is a just war. After all, Saddam Hussein was a wicked man, and he had weapons of mass destruction. Well, it didn't matter whether he had weapons of mass destruction. He was a wicked man, and he killed probably 50 to 100,000 Kurds with poison gas, and he is a wicked man, and the world's far better off without him. But what about the Americans, like George Herbert Walker Bush, the president's father, who backed Saddam Hussein after he killed the 50 to 100,000 Kurds using poison gas and continued to give him money and military supplies and recognition and did absolutely nothing about him until, you know, the present time? In other words, aren't the people who backed Saddam Hussein equally guilty?
Well, yes, and that hypocrisy, whether or not Americans are aware of it, is very visible to the rest of the world. Rumsfeld, there are pictures of him shaking hands after concluding deals with Saddam Hussein. And there's a tremendous hypocrisy in this where we say we're going in for weapons of mass destruction. It was pretty evident they weren't there. As far as the civilians hurt by Saddam, we certainly could look at the civilians that have been hurt by our incursion there. But the Kurds that you referenced who were killed were encouraged to rise up against Saddam, and we're told they'd have CIA and American backing, and then we backed out. We've meddled in there many, many times and in many other nations. But at the outset, you said many people call this a just war. Many Americans do call this a just war. Oh, Saddam was a bad man. It's a just war. That's great. That's their standard. That's not Christ's standard. If some people said, you know, it was a good war because now we're going to control the oil, and that's best for us, and if we kill 100,000 Iraqi children, that's too bad, and I'm not a Christian, and that's what I believe, there's really no challenging that, because if their ethical code is not a Christian code, it's a Darwinian code, the survival of the fittest. But if we call ourselves Christian, and George Bush has said that he would bring Christ's teachings into office, then we look at a war as to whether it would be okay with Jesus Christ, whether he would term it a just war, not whether I and my layperson or street definition would. And if we do the research and look what the just war doctrine is, which is actually an exception to the broader Christian principles, which wouldn't even justify war in those circumstances, it doesn't add up. It doesn't meet the doctrine, the requirements of the doctrine of just war. And that's what I argue in my book and hopefully prove.
All right. Well, you hang on there. We're going to be back in just a moment with John Clark. And we're going to invite your calls. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. As we begin discussing this idea of a Christian words and Christian actions. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is John Clark. And of course, I'm sure many people in the Bush administration will say, well, the president, though, isn't torturing anybody, and he feels very bad about this. It's those other people. It's those people in the military or the CIA or maybe Donald Rumsfeld. He was the one who authorized this. But how can we hold the president of the United States responsible for the things that other people did?
Well, you're just trying to work me up now, aren't you?
Yep, absolutely. I'm playing the devil's advocate. That is what a good talk show host does.
Well, I feel, as you know, I feel very strongly about that issue, and I think you know that from the book. And my dad was a Marine, and I'm proud of my military service personnel who do fight for our freedom, but that's why they shouldn't be misused. And we have an obligation to stand up for them. And if they're put in a position that's unwarranted or wrong by our government, and they only have us out here to speak up for them, because they don't have the right to do that. In the case of the use of torture in Abu Ghraib and elsewhere, Americans are asked to believe that thousands of military personnel at different locations around the world, from different backgrounds, they're from different geographical areas, from different generations, suddenly all decided to start torturing people, and that there are a few bad apples. The evidence is out that George W. Bush initiated this whole process, this whole escalation of techniques used under by this country because of the memos that he organized with Alberto Gonzalez. And to then tell our military personnel to go use techniques like this, and then when they get caught and it's exposed, to then blame them for it and call them a few bad apples, is a double offense or insult to our military. They were doing what they were told. They shouldn't be hung out to dry when they get caught for following orders. And the truth is that not only does George Bush not feel bad, he was outraged that someone revealed this truth, that a military, that it was actually some soldiers who took pictures and then revealed them to the public. He was mad about that and has tried to pass laws to prevent that happening again. And the most heinous of pictures from Abu Ghraib have been withheld by the Pentagon and have never been released to the American public, because it would just be too inflammatory for us and for Muslims around the world. And many Americans quibble over whether that was torture or not. If those things were done to our servicemen, we would surely raise a voice of opposition, I would think. And all of the techniques used in Abu Ghraib and elsewhere were used by the Soviets in the gulags. And I document that in the book, too.
And I think it's not so important to understand that, you know, when we have a nation where we are leaders, have turned against God. It doesn't matter what a person says. Look and see what they do. And we have a right to be judged. And as it says, judge not, lest you be judged by the judgment you judge. And we should be. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is John Clark. His book is Christian Words and Christian Actions. It's a fascinating read, and first of all, we'll invite our calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But John, I want you to get the telephone number out where people can get your book and the website where they can get your book.
Thank you. The phone number is 877-421-7323. The website is www.christianwords.us. And that phone number again is 877-421-7323. The book is also available through Amazon.com and other major Christian distributors. So it's there for people to find. And I worked on it hard, so hopefully I've included information to help people seek for themselves the answers to these questions.
But I don't think most Christians like to have the president criticized. I mean, after all, he was our candidate. We got him in there. He was going to bring Christian morality back to America. And, of course, he was going to stop abortion. And he was going to preserve traditional family values. And I think most Christians feel that we have a certain investment in the current administration. And a lot of people really resent anybody critical, even when they're absolutely right in everything they say. Sometimes we really don't want to see reality as it really is. Sometimes it's almost too painful. Have you run into people who've had this response to your book?
Well, a few. I think it's interesting because they say that people will not accept facts which are in conflict with their core belief systems. But I think many Americans right now on the religious right have a conflict within their core belief systems. They have two overlapping systems. One is their belief in Christ, and another is their belief in the American conservative ideology, which this party is representing. And unfortunately, I don't make the rules. God did. And if we have to choose between our loyalties to Christ and to worldly political parties, and they're in conflict, and we have to choose, then for me, and I think for most Christians, it's a simple choice. So some people have been unwilling to look at the facts, but many, particularly Christians, have been willing to look, and they voted for Bush. But I'll confess, I voted for Clinton in one of the elections. And I felt that when he became a liar, because it wasn't just about his sexual promiscuity, it was about him lying under oath repeatedly at a deposition, in front of a grand jury, things that he should have gone to prison for, and he still calls himself a victim. Well, I voted for him, and he didn't walk the walk that he represented he was going to walk, so I felt that he betrayed me. I think America's Christians should be the ones that are the most upset, because this man, in response perhaps to Clinton, many Americans were hoping for a true Christian ethic in the White House in George W. Bush. Well, guess what? He didn't deliver. And just like I was disappointed, people who supported Bush, I've prayed for Bush, and I hoped he was going to bring that Christian ethic into the office. And when I saw the actions coming out of this administration and the things that Americans were being told and what was being done, I saw that we hadn't been given what we were promised. And so I think that, yes, some people are resistant to this, but I have to say many people in religious right have been very gracious. They know that I'm Christ-based, and once they know that, they're willing to listen to the facts and listen to the truth and see what I've documented. And I haven't had a Christian Republican read my book yet who has not thanked me for writing it and had them think more about issues which have been put in a way which is morally illogical. This book hopefully helps bring them back to Christ and bring all of us back to be more Christ-centered and more logical in how we analyze these problems that face our country today.
Well, I think that one of the problems is a lot of people don't like to face reality. They want to live in their own little world where everything is nice, and we have candy canes, and we have waterfalls, and we have lots of pink lemonade, and isn't that the way the world really is? And the truth of the matter, it's not the way the world is, and we have to be discerning. I think as Christians, we are called to be discerning, and we're to look at the things, and even if we have to admit that maybe we were wrong, we have to admit we were wrong and say we were taken in. And this is the great tragedy, is an awful lot of them don't want to. And one of the big problems, you know, as far as I'm concerned, is the fact that Karl Rove has regular telephone conferences with the leaders of a number of the mega churches across America so that he can get the ministers of the United States to continue supporting the Bush administration. And, of course, you know, they may, if they do the right thing, they may even get one of these million-dollar grants, faith-based initiative grants. But certainly, I really almost feel that they're manipulating the Christian leaders of this country not to speak out on moral grounds about the terrible things that are happening now that are destroying the reputation of Christianity throughout the world.
Well, I agree, and I just find it remarkable that someone like Karl Rove, who, as far as I can tell, doesn't have any real theological credentials. In fact, he's been called a Machiavellian aficionado who regularly reads Machiavelli's works, and Machiavelli is sort of the reverse of what Jesus would teach us. I think we do need to admit we were wrong and not follow those others into sin once we're aware that they're misleading us. And the Bible is my resource for that. We're told that a good tree cannot bear evil fruit, and that we would know trees by their fruit, and that we should not follow leaders who profess to have the Spirit of God, but whose actions show otherwise. Why did Paul and Jesus over and over and over warn us about the false prophets who would come, who would be ravenous wolves in sheep's clothing, pretending to be Christians? If in fact that weren't going to happen, if we shouldn't be discerning, if we shouldn't be paying attention so that we're not misled. And so I believe you're quite right, and you know that I argue this in my book, is that we need to, as Christians, we need to face reality. We can't be complacent in the face of what's going on in the world, and our job is to harvest souls for our faith and to not be fearful. And a lot of the complacency you talk about, the hiding from reality, comes from people feeling fearful, which we can have compassion for, but our God teaches us not to live in fear, but to fear our God, and that we will have hardship in life, and that we should use it to become more like Jesus, not to see who can collect more toys before they pass on, which is the American mantra. So it really is a question about our integrity as American Christians, whether we just turn the other way and say, well, I don't have any influence on that, that's just the way it is in the world, or whether we really do aspire to do what Jesus would have us do, which is to demand more Christian response from our government.
And that old adage, judge not, lest you be judged, really goes on to say, let you be judged by the judgment you judge. In other words, if you are going to make a judgment on others, they're going to make a judgment on you. And God will make a judgment on you. But we still have the obligation, you know, first of all, to lead moral lives. And secondly, if we find somebody who is professing to be a Christian, by their words but not by their actions, and especially when it is so harmful to the image of Christianity throughout the world, I think we have not only the right, I think we have an obligation to speak out. And I'm sure that's how you felt when you wrote the book, isn't it, John?
Well, yes, and I make that argument. One thing I've noticed is, actually, let's use a current example. Look at the fall of Mel Gibson in the latest episode. Everything that he's done of good and what he did with the Passion of the Christ movie is undermined and threatened by his anti-Semitic comments. We could look at Jimmy Swaggart, who spent decades preaching the word, and then he stepped into the pits of the sewers in the inner city and was and misstepped. And much of the world, especially non-Christians, remember him more for his fall than for all of the great presentations he ever gave. All the great sermons he could have ever conducted were undermined so tremendously. And it's interesting to me that conversely, evolution people will embrace no matter how much is shown to tarnish it. It seems to be the reverse. But that's why we're held to the high standard. That's why Paul tells us to stay in the light. We have to walk in the light. And how we behave is our testimony to non-Christians and other people. They're looking for that weakness in us to use as an excuse to say, oh, look at him. He's just talk. And then they don't follow Christ. Unfortunately, people shouldn't judge Jesus Christ by his followers, but they do. And that's why absolutely we are held to a standard. We are required to judge others, not to judge others whether they're going to hell or to heaven, but to judge their behaviors, to rebuke them publicly, Paul tells us, so that we can send a message that God has a standard, we're held accountable to it, and we take it seriously. If we don't take it seriously, we can't expect others to. And if we follow our leaders into sin, like war and the use of torture, then will we be judged vicariously or for those actions when we sit on the judgment seat before Christ?
I always like to point out that men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And if we're not taking a stand for righteousness, then we become as guilty as the others. We have the right still in this country to speak out, but not only the right, I believe we have the obligation, whether it is popular or not. And that's why I do what I do. And many times what I do is not very popular, but I always hope that it's what God would have us do. Well, John, have you decided what you're going to do? Are you going to go to seminary? Are you going to continue trying to get your book out and write more books?
Well, actually, I am going to try to have my cake and eat it too. I just emailed the seminary yesterday that I'm going to defer until the spring semester, so starting in January, because I do have more work to do right now, and I'm about to do a book tour that may take me around for a few weeks and would interfere with my studies. And I've had some interest in my next book, which I'm working on. Called Living the American Doom, which is actually a cheerful book because it talks about how instead of putting our faith in technology and money and government and flags, we should put our faith in God and then it'll be okay because providence is there for us where progress is failing us. So I feel compelled to finish that book. I've had some interest from a couple of Christian publishers.
All right, fine. Well, certainly the Blind Press up there in Oregon does a great job, and we actually carry a number of their books through my ministry, and that may very well be how we got the copy of your book initially. Well, anyway, of course, you know, I think that what you've done is done something that really needed to be brought out. I don't think it's not a very popular message with a lot of people, but I think it's the message that has to be brought out. And I think that when Paul was going all over, or Peter or the other disciples, and they were talking, you know, to people who really didn't want to hear about Christianity, but somebody had to do it, and that was their job. They were called by God to do it, and they changed the world. No question at all. I think that we can have a profound impact. I think your book will have a profound impact if we could just get people to read it. Again, the title is Christian Words and Christian Actions, and it's available at Amazon. It's available one more time. Get that telephone number out for Wine Press.
Yes, it's 877-421-7323. And I think, Dr. Stan, if we're not ruffling feathers somewhere, then we're probably not doing our work in our ministry for Christ. And I think it was our message from our pastor this way. I think it was 1 John where Paul talks about murder, but also indifference. And indifference maybe being a greater killer and greater sin for us in life when we're indifferent to the suffering of others. And so I think you're right that we do have to stand up, even though it's not popular. And if it were popular, we wouldn't have to stand up. If Christianity were popular and Christian doctrines were dominating our government, then I wouldn't have had a book to write. And if George Bush had delivered on the promises that he gave the American people, then I would be happy to not have written this book. I don't need this controversy. I didn't really seek it. It's not my goal. My goal is to serve God in the way that he would have me do, and this is what I think he wanted of me.
Well, I'm sure it is, and of course, as we look and see what's gone on over in Iraq, about 100,000 civilians have been killed. Who's responsible for that? Well, it was just a mistake, folks. We thought they had weapons of mass destruction. Just so sorry that 100,000 people are dead. 1,800,000 of the middle-class Iraqis have fled the country and given up everything and are impoverished. They're living in Jordan and other Arab countries. 1,800,000 forced from their homes in Iraq by the American invasion that was just a mistake, just awful mistake. So sorry about that. And how many of the poor people behind have lost their homes and have been impoverished? And how many of them will never be the same because of their exposure to the depleted uranium dust that we're leaving there, and of course all the other destruction of the infrastructure of the country? There's no water a lot of places. Electricity's only there part of the time. I mean, the whole infrastructure of the nation has been destroyed. And it wasn't that when the wicked Saddam Hussein was in power. And if we're going to look after wicked people, maybe we ought to go down to Fidel Castro. He killed 15,000 people there when he came to power, and yet he travels to America all the time, go to the United Nations, and nobody ever suggests we arrest him for slaughtering the people who were in power before he came to power. So, you know, we seem to have a double standard. And, of course, Saddam was a wicked man, but there are a lot of wicked people in this country. And some of them are living as well. And should we go to war against Washington, D.C. because there are wicked people there? Or would other countries be justified in attacking us because we have people in Washington, D.C. responsible for the deaths of 100,000 Iraqis by just making a mistake, thinking there were weapons of mass destruction when there weren't any? So anyway, when you talk to people about your book, John, what did they tell you?
Well, I hear different things. As I say, I've had a number of people who have been very upset by reading my book because of what it revealed to them about the man that they were putting their faith in. But they've also thanked me. They haven't been upset with me. They've been upset because they were misled and realized from my book that that was the case. Some people have read my book who were more inclined to agree with me anyway, and that's what drew them to it. I could have written a book to be popular just for people that I thought would be persuaded, but that really wouldn't change the status quo. My job is to try, or my goal is to try to awaken people who have been misled to hold George Bush accountable and take a look and say, you know what, I can't be faulted for wanting to have a Christian president, but and I voted for you, but you didn't deliver.
But how about the congressmen and the senators who could have stopped this foolishness and didn't, who voted to continue the war?
Well, and that's the, I think that there's a turning point going on there as well. Many Congress people early on were browbeaten into submission because if they suggested anything against the foray into Iraq, it was suggested that they were unpatriotic. But I would like to think that I, as a Christian, whether I was a congressperson or just Joe Bloggs on the street in America, that at the time of slavery in this country, when people were moving for abolition, that I, as a Christian, would be on the side of those people who were perhaps unpopular and were in the minority, who were trying to free slaves and have black people treated as equal humans before God, because that's what my God would have me do. And I'd like to think that when American Indians were being slaughtered around this country in the name of manifest destiny and expanding our nation and that God was on our side, I'd like to think that I would be in the minority of those Christian people who said that all human beings are children of God and that we should convert the Indians to Christianity and not be slaughtering them. And so likewise, I'd like to think that right now I and many Congress people would stand up for what's right in the situation in Iraq. And when we go to church on Sunday and when we pray for our troops in Iraq, do we also pray as Christians for God's children, the five-year-old Iraqis that might have been blown up the other day, in a society with no infrastructure, with people living in horrible squalor, many of whom may be hearkening back to the days of Saddam and wistfully soon, but you realize that we're importing oil into Iraq now. All of the promises have not come forth.
That's one of the great tragedies of today. You know, remember when George Bush landed the plane on the aircraft carrier and announced the war in Iraq was over? The war in Iraq was over. It was back there in 2003. And here we are, 3 years later, now we're in the middle of a civil war, hundreds of people dying every day. Well, John, you've got three minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I thank you. And in wrapping up that last thought, when you point out that if we were to invade every country that started killing its own people, we'd be in a lot of countries right now, and we wouldn't have a moral code anymore, and what's to keep others to say that invading us would be preemptive, and we hear that in North Korea now. I thank you very much for the opportunity to serve our Lord Jesus in trying to spread his teachings through this book and through your radio program tonight. I ask people to have a look at the website and see the other information contained there at ChristianWords.us and to perhaps look at the book, 877-421-7323. There's a lot of information there for more research and for people to learn more about what God would have us do in these trying times as Americans and as Christians.
And, of course, my contention is that the only hope for America is not in politics. It's not to elect Christian people. It's to transform the lives of the people of this country so they will do what is right. And if they have people who are doing what is right, they will be, of course, electing Christians to office. And those Christians will do what they're supposed to do rather than what is politically expedient, looking to the next election as to whether they're going to get money from the Republican or the Democratic Central Committee. That's what it's all about. And we need people who do what's right and look to God for their guidance rather than simply do what's expedient, looking to the next election.
Amen.
Well, John, I really appreciate what you're doing, and so I really want to thank you so very much for being with us again. The telephone number, if you'd like to learn more about the book, is 877-421-7323. That's 877-421-7323. And what's the website again?
ChristianWords.us.
ChristianWords.us. So I hope you'll go there. I hope you'll look it up. I hope you'll seriously contemplate what this is about. We're having an election here in about just a couple of months now. This is going to be one of the most important elections in our nation's history. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens, whether the Republicans continue controlling both houses. And then, of course, even more than that, if the Democrats take over, will they have the courage to do anything, or will they simply continue the same policies, business as usual? Anyway, God bless you, John. Thanks very much. We'll look forward to having you. I think we have you scheduled on an evening program here sometime in the next week or so.
Yes, sir, and God bless you and everything you're doing as well. Thank you so much.
Good night. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, that was John Klar. That's K-L-A-R. And John, as an attorney, his whole life was destroyed. And yet he has a new life in our Lord. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we really look to you to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day, every weekday, and 30 stations or more on the weekend, trying to educate the people about what's really going on, about what really happened on September 11th, because you haven't been told the truth about what the next step is, and, of course, what's really behind the people who control both political parties, because, ladies and gentlemen, we have one political party in America. It has two branches. one of the Republicans, one of the Democrats, all dedicated to globalism and the destruction of the sovereignty of this country, and merging us into, first of all, a North American Union, and then, of course, into a New World Order, and a New World Religion. And with the Republican appointees in the Supreme Court, are we doing anything to allow prayer and God back into our schools? To do away with the teaching of evolution, or at least to have both evolution and creation taught in our schools? And I would suggest no. And I think, tragically today, Christianity is beginning to lose its attraction to many people because they look at what's going on in America today and they say, if that's Christianity, I don't really want anything to do with it. Well, you and I know that this is not a reflection of Christianity. It is the reflection of some other force. And what is that force? Well, that's why you need to get our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. That's the occult hierarchy. If you'd like a free copy of our May newsletter, it goes into immigration, but who is really behind the immigration and who do they truly worship? That's the May newsletter. You can get it at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Or if you get callers at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and just ask for a free copy of the May newsletter, I think you'll enjoy it. Or maybe you won't enjoy it. At least you'll learn a lot. Again, our website, RadioLiberty.com, all of our newsletters are there. You have our permission to pull them down, to read those newsletters, and to copy the newsletters, and help us distribute them across America. And then, of course, I think that we hope many of you out there will want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, that you'll want to get the new book we're carrying, Hostage to the Devil, written by Malachi Martin, a Jesuit priest, based upon 5 exorcisms. And I promise you, when you read this book, you will never look at the world through the same eyes again. And you may want to get the 4-tape set we have with Father Martin as well. We had the unique privilege of interviewing him on 4 separate occasions. That's the Wisdom of Malachi Martin 4-tape set. And if you get it with the Hostage to the Devil book, why, you'll get a special rate on that. We hope that many of you will remember that we do carry the Berkey products, and here in California you can only get the Berkey Light. Across America, with the exception of California and Iowa, you can get both the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light. And if you want to get the fluoride out of your water, the Berkey Light will take fluoride out of your water. You need to get it out. And if you don't know that it's a poison, and the doctors, the scientists, the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, are trying to get the truth out and being blocked at every turn, go to their website, www.nteu280.org, nteu280.org, National Treasury Employers Union 280.org. Read what they're saying. They're destroying the minds of your children. They're destroying the endocrine function. We're increasing the incidence of Down's disease. We're destroying the fertility of people all across America. They know exactly what they're doing. But, of course, as you drop the intelligence of the people, why will not object to the New World Order and the New World Religion? You want to get a material on fluoride? You can get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. We've got books and syllabuses and DVDs. You need to find out what's going on. You need to find out why we have so much autism. It's in the vaccines, and it's still being used, you know, on our elderly. It's still being used on our 6-month-old children as they give them the vaccine shots laden with mercury. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.